Love is like itching in my heart. Supremes were quoted on this day in 1966. I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back here to the Mark Steiner Show. That was our moment in music history we bring you. And we're about to have a conversation that we've been looking forward to for a few weeks now. And glad we could finally have it arranged here. We're about to talk to Robert Hilary King. Robert Hilary King is one of the Angola Three, which we'll be describing in detail here in a moment. We've covered we thought was going to be the release of Albert Woodfox after all 30 years in solitary confinement. Robert Hilary King has spent 29 years in solitary confinement, one of the founders of the Black Panther Party inside of Angola prison in the early 70s. Joins us by phone. Robert Hilary King, it's an honor. Good to have you with us. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Robert, if we could just take a step backwards in time, because many people may have heard of the Angola Three and of the prison Angola, but really have no sense of what any of that means or who you are and who you were and who the three of you were. Could you just give us a brief history to set people up for that?
Okay, I'll do my best to give a brief synopsis of the idea. But Herman Albert and I, we were all, convicted of separate charges. We were from New Orleans, Louisiana, and we were all became members of the Black Panther Party. Albert, after having, left the New Orleans Parish Prison, he escaped from the New Orleans Parish Prison. He went to New York, and he became politicized there. When they returned him to Louisiana, the New Orleans Parish Prison, and subsequently he was sent to Angola. At the same time, Herman Wallace had been in prison for some time, and he was back in court on an appeal, and he came in contact with members of the Black Panther Party, because while he was in prison, he was considered, he had written a lot of writs and tried to change condition in prison. So they placed him on a tier where he had members of the Black Panther Party. Sometime in 1970, I think it was August, September 71, the Black Panther Party, well, it was 1970, the first, what they call shootout, took place in New Orleans, Louisiana. And later on, it was another shootout. But as a result, there were 12 original Panthers that were arrested in there. There was, I think, 9 men and 3 women. And they were in the New Orleans Parish Prison as well. And this is where Herman and Albert, and subsequently I met some of those members. And Herman and Albert were sent to Angola. They became members of, Albert did so while he was in New York. He became politicized there, and then Herman, being placed on a tier with members of the Black Panther parties, and he adopted the theory. He felt that the theory that they had was pretty decent with regards to applying it to prison anyway, with regards to the description of prison and how prison relates to the system itself. And so he became politicized. And they went to Angola. Angola at the time in 1970, 71, 72, it was considered the worst prison in the nation. There were inmates who really were the backbone of the security there. They had the guns, the 30-30 Winchesters, and they had the batons, the bats, and they had the whatever else it took to maintain security. Of course, there were always an array of what they call free personnel in the background to give them the moral inducement that they needed. And so they took advantage of it. And they participated in selling of younger inmates who were considered fresh fish. The main, working crop in Angola was sugar cane, and they worked 17 hours a day. It was a seasonal thing, and it happened during the wintertime, and a lot of these guys who worked the fields, they did not have raincoats and enough boots, and during sugar cane season, when it rained, it just didn't rain anymore, whether you had the clothes or apparel or not to go out there to work in it, and that was a man cropping, so it was mandatory that people work. And Herman and Albert and other people who were members of the Black Panther Party and empathizers and sympathizers, they saw this, and they decided to, get guys together. Albert and Herman decided that just because they were in prison or, they were prisoners, they had certain constitutional rights, and they saw it as being akin to a chattel slavery, and so they began holding political classes. And not long afterwards, after this, they began to hold these classes among whites and blacks as well, and they began to get a lot of support in prison. And because of that, they became targets. Not long after that, a young security officer was found slain in a dormitory, And the first people who were suspected of it were Herman Albert and other members of the Black Panther Party. There were four initially charged. At the time, I wasn't even in prison. I was still in the New Orleans Parish Prison. However, I had become politicized as well because there were people, you know, who they placed on the tier where I was who were members of the Black Panther Party, and I totally agreed. I definitely wanted freedom from a charge that I felt I was, you know, I wasn't supposed to have. It was injudicious, and I wanted freedom from that, and so it was good for me, and I definitely wanted some freedom, and I understood the police brutality. I understood the nature of everything that they were saying. And so I, too, became a member of the Black Panther Party. But when I went to Angola, they placed me in solitary confinement. Herman and Albert had already had been suspected of taking part in this, you know, this man's death, and they were subsequently being held in prison. And they placed me in the same place where they were, which was closed cell restriction, known as another name, solitary confinement, or CCR.
And that's...
And I was in CCR, you were there for, you know, well, you 23 hours a day, 7 days a week. But that was a condition in which Herman and Albert found themselves, you know, going to prison and becoming targeted and then being charged with a crime, despite the fact that no forensic evidence linked any of the people who were charged in this crime. It didn't link either one of them. There were bloody prints found at the scene of the crime. Bloody prints was found on the knife, on whatever knife that they found. It didn't match either. Albert taking a polygraph test and passed the test. I understand, you know, on the legal terms, and I use this in quotation, that, you know, these things are not admissible in court, but had Albert failed that lie detector test, you can bet one thing that the juror, the foreman of the jury, would have gotten a sealed envelope at the end of trial saying that he failed a polygraph. But this is the latitude that, that district attorneys have, and they take advantage of this. And in any case, Albert was convicted under these circumstances, and however, his case has been overturned, as you know, several times, twice by a federal judge and once by a state judge. Herman's conviction, too, was overturned, but as you know, he had advanced liver cancer. He was held in prison for those many years, and he was released, 3 days later, he died.
So, and you spent 29 years in solitary confinement, and you're looking at your friend, Albert Woodfox, who we thought was going to be free. He spent 43 years in a 6x9 cell in solitary confinement. 43 years, not just in prison, but in solitary confinement for a crime he probably did not commit, that they're now trying to retry him on when everybody's dead, who was an alleged witness whose testimonies in the beginning were shown to be false, but now they can't even they want to read statements from the dead so-called witnesses and keep this man in jail who a federal judge has ordered to be free.
Yes. And Albert, now he remains, like you say, in isolation. He's not in one of the Louisiana prisons, but he's in a Louisiana detention center in St. Francisville, Louisiana, where he's being held, you know, under more strenuous isolation than he was when he was in prison, because he was surrounded. He was on a tier, and he was in a 6x9 foot cell, but he's isolated now in a single, you know, room or cell by himself with a huge steel door. So he's more isolated now than ever. And despite the fact, as you say, a federal judge has ordered his release and has given reason, stated reason as to why Albert could not be given a fair trial in Louisiana for the same reason you acknowledged, and when you came on, that all the witnesses are dead and all the evidence. And despite the fact that they did have witnesses, it was proven that, you know, their testimony was false. And so Albert, you know, he stands unconvicted, despite the fact that a federal judge, you know, has said that he can't get a fair trial in Louisiana. Nevertheless, the state of Louisiana, well, Buddy Caldwell, I can't say the state of Louisiana. I think people in Louisiana, if they really knew, and some know of it, but if I think the majority of the people in Louisiana knew that these type of things was happening, I think they would take, the attorney general to issue for doing this type of thing, because a lot of money has been wasted, will still be wasted, and even though Albert has been determined and decreed by a federal judge that Albert cannot be given a fair trial, well, what is his intent? What is the attorney general's intent? To give Albert now, for a third time, an unfair trial?
So what are people doing about it to defend Albert Wood Fox now? What are you in the middle of doing to protect him, and what's happening with his case?
What is happening now is the same Albert case. It must be, let it be understood that Albert case, the mandate in which overturned Albert case and ordered a new trial, that stands no matter what. The Attorney General has been allowed to do, as he was allowed to do the second time when Albert's case was overturned by a federal judge and the judge ordered his release. He has managed to get a three-judge panel on the Fifth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeal, you know, in the first instance, was to stop Albert being released a couple of years ago. He put disseminated misinformation into the community in which Albert was to be lived in with his niece, a gated community, a nice environment. But he sent some words out to the council, in the community and say that individual who had been convicted, who was charged with rape or rapist and a murderer is in your community. And Albert has never, ever been charged with rape or never convicted of rape, which was erroneous. But these are the type of thing that tactics that he's allowed to use to get away with. And I'm sure he has used some other tactics, you know, in order to keep Albert out of the judge ordered Albert to be released, just released on his own recognizance, unconditionally, and say that a new trial, ordered that the state, be barred from retrying him. So this is the thing that the justices are considering now. August the 31st, they need to determine. They're not determining whether or not Albert deserves a new trial because he'll remain in prison, and he will get a new trial. And I imagine he will probably get an unjust trial, but an unfair trial. But he'll get a trial. What they're considering now, Mark, is whether or not they will give him unconditional release and allow him not to be retried by the state. But what has happened is, in the process of this ruling, the Attorney General, Buddy Caldwell, has allowed, through legal maneuverment, to bring the case to a halt because he had filed opposition to this, opposition to that. And the court, usually put things on hold in order to adhere to things. But what is at stake now is that Albert, on the 31st, what will happen on the 31st of August, maybe the ban will be lifted. The order will be lifted, and Albert may be, slated to leave prison. But Buddy Caldwell, we are told, has have gotten a state jury, grand jury to reindict Albert under state charges, despite the fact that the federal court, has overturned this thing a couple of times. He wanted to try Albert in the court. There is a matter of jurisdiction. Don't know, actually, and when you look at it, don't know who have jurisdiction. Maybe they are dual jurisdiction. I think in order to get a clear picture on this, I think the lawyers will have to be the one to decipher exactly who has jurisdiction. But right now, we can say that Albert is, despite the fact that the mandate stands and he will subsequently have a new trial, he is bogged down now. This case has been halted in a legal quagmire, by the Attorney General office, or whatever his intent might be, despite the fact we know it can't be a good intent, despite the fact that he can't win another trial in Louisiana. He has found ways to bog this case down. And I think what people need to do, or what they can do, is to go online and look at our petition that we have, www.angola3.org.com, and it tells people what they can do. And in the meantime, they can write Governor Jindal, asking him to ask Buddy Caldwell to stop standing in the way of justice, because that is exactly what he has been doing for years now.
So when was the last time that you were able to see Albert Wood Fox?
I saw Albert Wood Fox about a month and a half ago, and I talked to him. He's allowed to call now. I talked to him about maybe 4 or 5 days.
How is he doing physically? His health. How is he doing?
Well, he's 68 years old now, and his health, you know, he has, from what I, borderline diabetes, you know, he's a diabetic. He has high blood pressure and perhaps a few other things that is wrong with him. However, his spirit is strong. His physical health is not like it used to be, and it's kind of showing up a little bit. But I imagine he has good days and bad days. But he has a, you know, he has a pretty good, his moral barometer about this is pretty good.
This is a huge struggle, and you've been in it for a long time, and stood strong all that time. And the idea of, you know, when I talked to my friend Eddie Conway, who spent 43 years in prison.
And, By the way, he said hi too.
Okay, good. I know you all saw each other recently. Go ahead. What were we going to say, Robert? I'm sorry.
No. Yes, we saw each other recently.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, but you were. I'm sorry for cutting you off.
No, that's cool. I was just going to conclude by just talking about this, what a difference it is to both of them are horrible, but spending 43 years in prison as our brother Eddie did, but Albert Woodfox has spent those 43 years not just in prison, but in solitary confinement.
Yes, he's still isolated, and the fact that he still maintains his equilibrium is seeming is cool, you know. But I say this, Mark, you know, despite the fact that it may not be any apparent, you know, physical or psychological, you know, or mental effect, I am thinking is that a person is kind of hard. A person cannot go through that type of tumor without becoming affected. It's kind of hard to get dipped in waste and not come up smelly, you know.
No, right, exactly.
Bit. And so I think solitary confinement has its effect. It has its impact. And whether or not it is smelt or seen or whether or not it is obvious, you know, to the naked eye, it doesn't matter. You are impacted by it. I can tell you that. The acclimation that takes place mentally within you in close confinement like that is telling. And it's sort of like, you know, it's progressive. It's ongoing. It really doesn't stop once you get out of prison.
But we've been talking here with Robert Hillary King, who is one of the Angola Free, the free member of the Angola Free. We have been talking about the case of Albert Woodfox, and Robert King's book is that he put out is From the Bottom of the Heap, the autobiography of a Black Panther, Robert Hillary King. And we look forward to having a longer conversation with Robert Hillary King sometime in the very near future to talk about his life and more and about prisons and the struggle for freedom in this country. And Robert Hillary King, I want to say it's an honor to have you on the program, and we will stay in touch.
Oh, awesome. Thank you.
And when you talk to Albert Woodfox again, tell him we are standing with him.
Will do. Thank you.
Thank you. We're taking a very brief break here. We're hearing Nina Simone, I Loves You Porgy, from her debut album, Little Girl Blue, released on this day in 1958. It was her only top 20 hit. But the new movie is about her, and we're all looking forward to that doc. So we're going to take a break here, come right back, and look at the situation with jobs for our youth in the city. What is the turmoil? What's the confusion? Where are the jobs? Stay with us.
If you can keep me, I want to stay with you forever, and I'll be glad. Yes, I love you, Pokey. Don't let him take me. Don't let him handle me with his hot hands. If you can keep me, I want to stay here with you forever.